south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Well, I'm back in the saddle again. My main computer took a crap on me, so I'm using a smaller one and my portable mic, so maybe the fidelity won't be so good again today. We'll see. You know, I've been traveling a lot lately, and airports are a chaotic disaster, getting worse and worse. The only saving grace being that in most Latin American airports anyway, they don't make you take your shoes off. By the way, I was talking to an ex-U.S. Air Marshal, ex because he's retired. He told me that someone in the U.S. government bureaucracy figured out the loss in dollar value and productivity due to having to take your shoes off at airports and going through all that rigmarole. He said just adding that take off your shoe part allowed the U.S. government bureaucracy to grow by 3,500 people. And of course, in the number of minutes you lose by taking your shoes off, having them scanned, putting them back on again, is a big time waster too. And we're not even talking about emptying your pockets, taking off your belt, your pouches, going back and forth through body scanners. We're just talking about the taking off and putting back on your shoe part, how that wastes time and eats into human productivity. Anyway, this retired air marshal guy told me that the cost in lost productivity, that means us, private people, private industry, was calculated to be over $150 million a year just because of that shoes off thing, thus confirming my suspicion. I mentioned this a long time ago on this show, probably 5 or 6 years ago, that the most effective modern terrorist in history was that one particular demented Arab who put a bomb inside the heel of his tennis shoe. Remember that? We're talking about one guy who probably spent no more than $50 on the whole setup. Talk about bang for your buck. Is solely responsible for causing over $150 million a year in lost manpower and productivity, and is responsible for creating over 3,500 useless U.S. government TSA jobs in the U.S. alone. Now, if that guy doesn't deserve the gold medal in the Terrorist Hall of Fame, I don't know who does. He's the one guy that got the biggest terrorist bang for the buck of all time. And there wasn't even a bang. Oh, and another thing this retired air marshal told me. He said, you know, it's so un-PC to tell the truth on the record, but behind the scenes, TSA people and the air marshals talk about this all the time. They say, all this extreme airport and public building security you've seen since 9/11 really signals the extreme success of Muslim terrorists. Meanwhile, the U.S. government talks about all those would-be terrorist plots that they've foiled. But as he said, that doesn't really matter. As long as the threat is there, the government bureaucracies to counter it flourish. They grow and grow. Now, of course, he says not all Muslims are terrorists, but practically every terrorist is a Muslim. What do you make of that? By the way, have you ever been to Barcelona, to the second most famous cathedral in the world? It's called La Familia Sagrada, means sacred family in English. Turns out it's the number one tourist attraction in all of Spain. Again, it's in Barcelona. If you've been there, I don't have to explain it to you. You'll know why it's a wonder of the world. Anyway, just this last year, I remember standing in line. I bought an advanced ticket online for $50 to get a fast-track ticket and guided tour into the place. Because otherwise, you got to wait like 2 or 3 hours if you just show up, buy a ticket at the ticket booth, and stand in line. So anyway, I got to the appointed meeting point about 15 minutes before my allotted time to get in. And as I walked into the little office to sign in, there are all kinds of tour posters everywhere, and one really big warning sign that said, please allow up to 30 minutes for the security checks on your way into the cathedral. I said, what? To the guy at the desk? You gotta be kidding. 30 minutes to do a security check? He said, it's for a reason. And then he looked back and forth to make sure no one but me could hear him. Lowered his voice and said, last year, we caught some Muslim terrorists with backpack bombs set to blow up the cathedral. which would have absolutely killed Spain's entire tourism business for at least a year. He said it in a way that made you feel quite uneasy, too. So, because some idiot Muslim terrorist tried to blow up Spain's biggest tourist attraction, everybody who enters the place has to go through a sort of FBI-like shakedown. Everybody who wants to see the place has to suffer. So, in the end, those would-be terrorists won, without even yelling Allah Akbar, without even triggering the bomb. Of course, that meant they didn't get their 40 virgins or meet Allah personally, but they did cause permanent, massive headaches for every tourist who from that moment ever wanted to see the place. So when you look at it with cold logic, they succeeded. They won. By the way, that cathedral, La Familia Sagrada, gets 10 million visitors a year at $25 to $50 a head, depending on which tour you take. So conservatively speaking, the place makes $250 million a year. And that's just for one single tourist attraction in Spain. And, you know, according to that air marshal, he said that's the next thing on the terrorist agenda. They brought down airplanes, taken down commercial buildings, blown up schools, restaurants, buses, trains, and subways. Next step is to disrupt the tourist industry. So, he says, expect a very popular, historic tourist attraction to get targeted, and in no particular order. Expect a huge amusement park like Disney to get targeted, and expect a very popular cruise lines ship to be targeted. Now, of course, those are things people don't like to talk about or think about, but there's more, he said. They're also looking to knock out the internet and poison some big first world cities' water supply. The clock is ticking, you know. Things have been pretty quiet for some years on the terrorist front. That is, terrorism targeted at the first world. There hasn't been a really big terrorist event for quite a while now. But when you think about the cost to society, even when they're caught well before a bomb goes off, millions upon millions of dollars are lost in productivity just due to the fact that everyone's got to be scanned and stripped, not just at airports these days either. It's true when you book tours for all the big monuments and galleries, especially throughout Europe. They absolutely shake you down. You go to the Louvre, you go to the Vatican, you go see the Statue of David in Florence. Man, they shake you down. Have you tried touring or visiting a famous church, monument, or museum lately? If you have, you can see terrorists win either way. Whether they catch the asshole before the bomb goes off or not, the rest of us suffer scans, strip downs, delays, and long lines forever after. And lots of sweaty, irritable inconvenience along the way. Oh, and by the way, I have to mention there's a big difference if you're checking out monuments and pyramids and cathedrals and various historic places in Latin America. There's a huge difference in the way the bureaucracy treats you before you enter one of those places. It's bureaucracy light. Very light. You know why? First of all, terrorists of the kind we've been talking about practically don't exist at all in Latin America. Why? Because it's not strategic. Besides that, terrorists love publicity. They live for it. They don't get much down here. Down here in Latin America, if a terrorist wants to blow up a bus or a train or take hostages, it almost gets no traction in the press at all. Hell, that kind of stuff happens every day in Mexico. People are sick of hearing about it. They're numb to it. So you pick up the morning paper in Mexico City. On page 6, there's a story about 5 decapitated guys strung up and hanging from a bridge. Again. That's why it's on page 6. Of course, we're talking about narco stuff, and tourists are generally not in the crosshairs. It's narcos against narcos in cities, areas, and barrios very infrequently visited by tourists. Although that kind of stuff is now encroaching on tourist areas. You've heard me mention that on previous shows, but it's not the kind of terrorism we're talking about. You see, the kind of terrorism we were talking about previously, you know, strap a bomb to your back, let's meet Allah, and 40 virgins kind of terrorism. Well, I gotta say, in my 31 plus years down here, that kind of stuff just doesn't happen. Why? Because terrorists want to cause as much disruption as possible and get the maximum press and media coverage out of it, too. They want to do damage to the first world and first world people, a.k.a. the great Satans, right? They've got nothing against Latin Americans and want the most bang for their buck. That's basically why Latin America's off the terrorist radar. You blow up the Eiffel Tower, man, or even get near it with a bomb? There goes the entire tourism business in France for the next couple of years. Meanwhile, if some fool tries to blow up a pyramid in Guatemala or Machu Picchu, first of all, that stuff's all rock, pretty much indestructible. Even so, it wouldn't get the kind of publicity an attack on Big Ben or the Louvre or the Sistine Chapel would get. Or how about an attack at the Cannes Film Festival? Man, that would shake the world up, be in the media for ages. I know, it's Cannes or Con. Only ignorant gringos like me say Cannes. Oh, and I know what some of you are thinking. There are different kinds of terrorists, eco-terrorists, coming out of the woodwork these days. You know, guys that throw paint on the Mona Lisa. Well, hell, that's not going to stop anybody from going to the Louvre. By the way, there's something else that's really been pissing me off lately, too. Wouldn't you know it, it has to do with transiting through airports. Once in a while, I'll drag one of my guitars or a piece of musical equipment from country to country. That means I got to go through airports and TSA shakedowns and all that. And if you're a traveler, you must know by now how nicely they treat your luggage. Fact is, as I was traveling just last week, I had one stowed piece of luggage. Now, normally I just have a carry-on and maybe a shoulder bag and a computer. It eliminates all that BS at the carousel, right? Well, this last time I was traveling for a month or so I had a piece of stowed luggage. Guess what? When I picked it up from the carousel at my final destination, it was missing one of the four wheels. Just sheared right off. Piece of Samsonite luggage, too, supposed to be guaranteed for life. Whose life, I wonder? I'm doubting they'll actually fix it. I'm sure they won't, because imagine what the shipping costs would be on a piece of luggage. By the way, Samsonite's a good piece of luggage. It's a good brand. You know what Latinos call it? Samsonite. Samsonite. Makes sense. That's how they pronounce the letters. Thing is, though, when I went to a store in Latin America where they sell luggage, the guy led me to an area, held his arms wide open, and said, Samsonite. Took a while for it to click. For a minute there, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Anyway, knowing how baggage handlers treat your luggage at the airport and in between, where you don't see exactly what they're doing, which would be nice. They should have cameras on those guys behind the scenes and monitors throughout the airport so you can see exactly how they mistreat your luggage. Anyway, knowing that, have you had any luggage accident problems? Breakage of things you've got inside or simply items stolen right out of your luggage? As for my case, all the international traveling I've done, only once in all that time has my stowed luggage not made it to the carousel at my destination. But within a day or two, it arrived at my doorstep. And as far as breakage, I don't think I've had any breakage. Till this last flight with the broken sheared off wheel. Though I've had some leakage within a suitcase, you know, toiletry stuff. I learned how to handle that stuff a long time ago. I buy Ziploc bags, the expensive ones, with a really good Ziploc slider on them. And I put any individual bottles with creams or liquids each in its own bag, so if it's going to leak or explode, it's sort of like a nuclear containment vessel. You know, something the Russians didn't bother to install at Chernobyl. Anyway, knowing what I know about baggage handlers, I'm always a little worried when I bring a guitar on a flight. And now, with all this massive new TSA bureaucracy, it's getting so that you don't know for sure if you can bring your guitar in the cabin with you like they always let you do in the old days. You absolutely want to have it there. You don't want it to go as stowed luggage. I've just heard of too many stories from my musician friends about guitars and other equipment that got wrecked or damaged when stowed or checked in. You want to avoid that at all costs, but sometimes at the very last minute, when you're right up to the gate, the attendant will say, "We'll check that in as stowed luggage for nothing." You don't want to do that. Though sometimes they'll tell you, you have to check it. They've got no room in the cabin. That's when you're in a kind of a nail-biting situation. You've got no choice. It's going to get jam-packed in there with the rest of the stowed luggage. So then why am I bringing this up when you're probably never going to bring a musical instrument aboard a plane? Well, as it turns out, one of my musician buddies from England, the UK, just sent me this little blurb about how they've got laws now about bringing musical instruments on planes. Yes, actual government laws concerning traveling on planes with musical instruments. He says, "Johnny, you wouldn't believe what's happening here in the UK with us musicians. Britain's exit from the European Union, you know, Brexit, has created even more layers of bureaucracy." He says it turns out the UK government has created a government-approved information website relating to musicians traveling with their instruments on airplanes. Essentially, he says, in the UK, you must now apply for a musical instrument certificate to fly. The permit lasts for 3 years, costs about £20, and can be used multiple times within that period. He says, supposedly, the bureaucracy was created so that musicians can find up-to-date information whilst traveling with their instruments, giving them the best chance of arriving at their destination with those instruments intact. He says, Johnny, this is shite, another tax-em-again ploy, a crock of shite. The UK government's bankrupt and they're grasping at straws. He says, but that's not all, Johnny. Another thing you'll need to consider, you'll be required to have a full understanding of the wood in your guitar, or your violin, or your cello, or your double bass. He says, Johnny, essentially, if your $75 beach guitar, or $2 million Stradivarius, is made of an internationally protected wood species like ebony or rosewood, you'll need to acquire and pay for a Convention on International Trade Endangered Species certificate from the government, called a CITES certificate. He says it's another small layer of bullshit, but if not accounted for, one that could quite conceivably cause you, at best, delays at the other end, or worse, you could see your guitar, banjo, or mandolin being confiscated at the airport. So, Johnny, just to let you know, it's getting beyond ridiculous here in the UK. We're broke, along with all the other mainland European countries. And I understand starting in January, if Americans want to visit the UK or mainland Europe, they can't visit as tourists visa-free anymore. They have to buy a visa. There's no logical reason for it except to extort more money from tourists. Since practically all governments are broke, someone did the calculations and decided 30 million tourists a year are coming in visa-free. How about we charge them $10 each, let them sign up online, and get approval instantly. After all, 10 bucks is nothing to an American tourist. Though calling it a visa is a joke because they won't reject anyone. It's just a tax scheme. But the Schengen, that is the EEU community, will make $300 million in the process. 10 bucks times 30 million. By the way, this new visa, starting on January 1st to travel to Europe, is called a European Travel Information and Authorization System, ETIAS. There are two exemptions to that $10 fee: minors under 18 and seniors above the age of 70. Man, I'll tell you, bankrupt governments will stop at nothing to squeeze just a little more blood out of that turnip. All right, how about an email from Pete? He says, Johnny, I've been living in El Salvador for 2 years now. And like you've said all along, it takes a lot getting used to learn how to drive Latin style. Now, over the years, I heard you talk about many things to look out for when you're driving. The dangers, the obstacles, the terrible drivers, the potholes, absolutely crazy-ass motorcyclists. I've heard you mention 100 different obstacles and dangers to driving in Latin America. But there's one thing I've noticed ever since I've been down here that you've never talked about, Johnny. You never mention how cars just stop anytime, anywhere they want to let people out. If I've seen it once, I've seen it 1,000 times. Doesn't matter if the road's deserted or jam-packed with traffic everywhere. A car or minivan or taxi will just stop. A door will fling open. One or two or three or five people will mosey on out. More often than not, they'll whip open that door on the driver's side, on the traffic side. I can't tell you how many times I've come very close to clipping a guy. You know, like in those high-speed chase scenes in movies, some uninvolved innocent always whips open a door, then a second later he gets it clipped off by someone in the chase. Tell you the truth, Johnny, I've been waiting and waiting to see someone clip a door like that. There have been so many close calls, but no cigar. Until about 3 days ago, when me and my lady actually witnessed such an accident. A taxi driver just decided to stop in a moving lane, and the passenger whipped the door open on the driver's side. Boom, he got clipped, but good, by a minivan. It played out just like in the movies. The door got whacked and sprung back like a mousetrap. Whacked the guy in the ass and sent him lunging forward. Man, I wish I'd have got that on camera. Would have got a million views for sure. As you might have figured, the drivers got out, had a big argument, blocked traffic for a couple of blocks. Then came two cops on a motorcycle. I don't know what happened then. I was just trying to get out of there and weaseled my way past them. Though I can imagine how it went down. I can't see anybody blaming the taxi guy. Why would they? All he did was stop abruptly in a rapid lane while his passenger jumped out the wrong side. I have to think that because it's so normal to do that here, it won't even enter the conversation. Signed, Pete, expat living in El Salvador and loving it. P.S. Johnny, if you do your next expat seminar in El Salvador, if you need any help with crowd management, let me know. I'm available. All right, Pete, thanks for the offer. Yep, it looks like we'll be doing an Expat Insider Seminar probably in January or February of 2024. We'll be partly in Guatemala, partly in El Salvador again. If you want to get on my early bird sign-up list, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Once again, it'll be a week long. Lots and lots of fun, too, as you drink from the fire hose. Yep, we'll have that fire hose good and ready. We've got to do that, you know, because we promised to give you a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B. Oh, and by the way, Pete, funny you should mention that cars just stop anywhere, anytime they want. Whip the door open and get out on the driver's side. No turn signals, no flashing lights. You know, Pete, I've had the same thoughts as you. For years, I'm thinking, I want to see someone get their door clipped right off, like in the movies. It's got to happen, right? There's just too many close calls. But somehow, through pure dumb luck, it never happens. At least I've never seen it. But oh man, do people come close to doing it sometime. I've been there. I've seen it dozens of times. Do these idiots have guardian angels or something? Well, you know what they say, God protects idiots, drunks, and retards, right? Oops, can I say that? Just did. So, Pete, I'm glad you mentioned it. Though I'm sure you've noticed, too, how many idiots will park their car on the side of the road, turn off the ignition, and just whip the driver's side door wide open and get out. I can't tell you the dozens of times I've almost clipped a guy doing that. Then, of course, there's all those idiot guys and gals who walk over to their car that's parked on the street, fling the driver's side door wide open, without even looking back to see if there's a car there ready to clip them. I can't tell you how many times I've had to hit the brakes or swerve when some idiot, even a guy in a brand new Mercedes or Range Rover, walks over and whips his car door open to get in, paying no mind to the car that's not 10 feet away and closing in fast. By the way, you know, being from Chicago, I got lots of listeners from Chicago. And when I get emails from them, they always say, Johnny, what do you miss about Chicago? And I tell them, nothing. And, of course, my brothers and sisters are always keeping me up to date on what's happening in Chi-Town. Like, for example, this AP news story that just came out a few days ago. The headline, Chicago TV news crew robbed at gunpoint while reporting on a string of robberies. So what do I miss about Chicago? Getting robbed, maybe? Yep, way back when I lived in Chicago, I was a victim of 2 break-ins, and I was there when the guys broke in. Anyway, you have to laugh, or maybe cry, when you hear the details of the story of the Chicago television news crew that got robbed. I'll read a little bit for you. It says a Chicago television news crew reporting on a string of robberies ended up robbed themselves after they were accosted at gunpoint by 3 armed men wearing ski masks. It said the 3 masked men, brandishing firearms, took their television cameras and other items. One of the men who was robbed, Luis Godinez, says the crew was filming a story about robberies. They'd just finished the job, so it was slated to run on the morning news. He said the footage they shot was in the camera that was stolen, so the story never made it on the air. I know, you're probably thinking, big deal. People get robbed all the time. Well, guess what? It says in this article, this was the 2nd robbery this month involving a Chicago news crew after a WLS-TV photographer was assaulted and robbed on August 8th while preparing to cover a weekday afternoon news conference on Chicago's west side. Then it says the robberies prompted the National Association of Broadcast Employees and Technicians, Local 41 in Chicago, which represents mobile TV crews. It prompted them to warn their members about the growing safety threats while demanding the news station take additional safety steps, including assigning bodyguards to TV crews. Yeah, right, like that's going to happen, since TV stations are getting eaten up by the internet. Oh, and did you know that my hometown, Chicago, that toddling town? Well, did you know what's been discovered? That there's a YouTube channel that's devoted exclusively to Chicago rappers who are in prison. It's got over 41,000 Instagram followers and 44,300 YouTube subscribers. Turns out, so far, there are 63 Chicago rappers who are posting their rap videos from somewhere within the Chicago penitentiary system. Isn't that nice, kiddies? Turns out, though, Chicago's not the only place that's got a Rappers in Jail YouTube channel. Turns out there's another YouTube platform called Crime Circus with almost 300,000 subscribers that uploads videos of Florida rappers in jail. Rappers in jail? That's something you'd have never figured, huh? Yet still I'm occasionally asked by some naive fool why I'd ever want to leave the good old USA. By the way, how's your plan B coming? Oh, one last thing. For all you guys and gals out there who are filtering your water, that's a very good thing, especially with these forever chemicals that are popping up everywhere. Well, I hate to break the news, but there's been a huge class action lawsuit filed against the Brita company, B-R-I-T-A. You might know it's one of the nation's most popular water filtration system. Turns out it falsely advertised that its products remove or reduce forever chemicals from tap water. Well, according to the lawsuit, Brita claims on the label that it could filter contaminants below detectable lab limits. Not true, especially for those forever chemicals, which are considered unsafe at any level. The studies coming out these days show we're all loaded with those forever chemicals, with Asians and Chinese in the Far East having three times as many chemicals in their system as we do. And you know, one of my buddies, an expat buddy, is formerly a guy from the food industry, a chemist, and he told me that's easy to explain why the Asians, the Chinese, have three times as many of these forever chemicals in their bodies. He's been there to China and says everyone heats up their soup and everything else in styrofoam cups in the microwave. He says everyone's addicted to that chemical Molotov cocktail called ramen soup. Did you ever read those labels? First of all, right up front it says artificial chicken flavor, artificial shrimp flavor, artificial beef flavor. That's the main headline on the package. Anyway, my buddy, who is an ex-food chemist, said you really put yourself at risk if you put styrofoam or plastic or any kind of paper cup even in a microwave and heat things up. He says every paper cup, even those Chinese carry-out boxes, have a coating on them with forever chemicals. Even those idiotic and terrible paper straws that everybody's switched over to, since the plastic ones have been called out as so bad for the environment. Well, those plastic ones may be bad for the environment, but the paper ones are terrible for humans. Especially, as my buddy says, when you're drinking anything warm through one of those paper straws. Once again, they nor paper cups, like coffee cups, are not 100% paper. They've got a very thin, forever chemical plastic coating on the inside that keeps them from getting saturated with the liquid product in the cup or going through the straw.
But you knew that already, right?
And here, I thought, like Al Gore, Bono, Leonardo DiCaprio, and George Clooney, I thought I was doing my part with paper straws to save the planet. By the way, my bad here. Sometimes, you know, when you speak a couple languages, things get lost in translation. For the longest time, I thought George Clooney's wife was Anal Clooney. Well, I was wrong about that. Good name for a rapper, bad name for a wife.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!